Okay, our next speaker is Francesca Schmidt, who will be discussing hydrodynamic simulations of SNRs, dust destruction by the reverse shock. Please be sure to look for the 5-minute warning.
Awesome, thank you, Dan, and thank you very much for giving me the chance to talk about my research. Could we lower the light a little bit? Thank you. So my name is Francesca Schmidt. I'm a PhD student at UCL, and as you can see from my title, what I want to talk to you today about is a question that has been raised several times throughout this conference so far, and the question is, we do have dust in the supernova remnant, but how much of that dust actually manages to get out of the supernova remnant? How much of it survives this reverse shock? Before I delve into that, however, I just want to give a quick shout out to the people in my group at UCL. So we work on two themes. The first theme is observing supernova remnants and figuring out how much dust we find in them. And the second theme, and that's the one that I'll be talking about today, is all about modeling the dust in the supernova remnant and particularly, of course, the dust destruction. Now, all of the members of my group are here either in person or in poster spirit, so please check out their contribution. They'll be very happy to talk about that. Now, what I will not be talking to you about today is all the dust basics, because you've just heard two talks about that. So instead, I'm going to bring you this picture, which I'm sure you've already started missing. So this is Cas A, obviously, and the big question now is, you know that there's dust in remnants like this. You know there's dust in core collapse supernova remnants. And you all know that we would like to get that dust out of the remnant and into the interstellar medium, but there's that nasty little reverse shock inside the remnant that might stop us from actually getting the dust out of it. Now, a lot of groups over the past decades have been trying to answer this question of what fraction do we actually get out of the remnant, and I'm going to give you a very brief rundown of these studies on the next slide. So all the models that have been coming out in the last couple of decades, they usually take two approaches. The first approach would be an analytical density profile of the supernova remnant. And if you want to go a little bit more fancy, what you would use is a hydrodynamic simulation of the ejecta, either smooth or clumpy. And then if you look at the studies, and there's going to be a list of references at the bottom in a second here, what you find is basically we have absolutely no idea. The predictions are anywhere between 0 and basically 100%, so that doesn't really help us. But that's not surprising because the whole thing is incredibly complicated. So I want to highlight a couple of challenges that we have when we try and model this. So the first challenge is actually getting the dust into our simulation. It sounds trivial, but it's anything but trivial. So what people usually do is, if they go for the hydrodynamic simulations, they use these passive tracers, which is doable and easy, but it's not typically ideal. The second thing they do is they use simplified physics, in particular simplified destruction mechanisms, and they tend to neglect the grain-grain collisions. And if there's one thing that you're going to take away from my talk today, I hope it's going to be that grain-grain collisions should not be neglected. So we're going to come back to that several times. And then lastly, what I want to mention is initial conditions. This is making comparing all of these codes even more difficult, because depending on what remnant you're looking at, you have different initial conditions that you feed into your code. And because the codes are so complex, this number, the prediction of the dust survival rate, is just all over the place. So at UCL, we thought what we would really like to have is a model with more comprehensive physics, a rigorous model that simulates the remnant, but also the dust destruction. So what we're using for that is, first of all, the so-called cloud crushing model. Now, we're implementing that in the hydrodynamic code AstroBear, and the cloud crushing model, you can see a little cartoon here at the bottom, is basically our computational domain, and we fill it with the ejecta. That's a light blue color. That's just our supernova remnant. Inside our remnant, we place a dense clump of gas, and this is where our dust is going to be located. And then from the lower X boundary, we introduce the shock that is coming in, hitting the ejecta, and then finally hitting the clump. And that then triggers the dust destruction mechanisms. Right. So we've got that in the code. Moving on to the more difficult question of how do we get the dust into the hydrocode. Now, what we're not doing is we're not using the tracers that other people have used before us. We've come up with our own model, which I'm going to introduce to you now. This model we've called the Dusty Grid model, and it works like this. So you start out with a distribution of grains. So you've got your grain size here, and you've got the number of grains of that specific size on the y-axis. And you sort that into bins. In this example, I've got 10 bins here. Now, for every single one of these bins, you add a time-dependent quantity in your hydrocode. So this is a 1D representation of what the grid cells in your code might look like. This is the cell of interest that we're looking at right now. And I've got bin 1 here, then I'm just adding bin 2 on top of that, and then bin 3 and bin 4 and so on. And inside these fields, I'm now putting the exact amount of dust that I have at that specific location in that specific size range. Now, once I have the dust in the hydro simulation, my dust can do two things. First of all, it can move from one cell to the next cell to the next cell. This is just simply moving through my computational domain. And to do that, we have changed the advection routines in the hydro code. And the second movement, and that's a bit more complicated, so you've got the horizontal movement across the grid. The second movement is actually a vertical movement across the bins. Now, we're doing that using source terms again in our hydro code, and this is the actual important bit, because this is how you get the dust destruction. Now, imagine you have a grain somewhere in a bin up here. That's going to be a large grain, right? And you collide that grain with some other grain, and the grains break apart. They're now small grains. These small grains, they don't belong in that bin anymore. They belong in one of the bins down there, a bin that corresponds to a smaller grain size. So you have to take those grains out, and you have to sort them into a smaller bin. So this is how we get the vertical movement here, which represents our dust destruction. Now, with all that in our code, I just want to give you a quick rundown of the other features that we have. So when we run our simulation, we have the hydrodynamic simulations, which include cooling and adaptive mesh refinement. And you can see a visualization here on the side, so we can focus, we can refine the areas of interest. Then our dust physics allows us to handle carbon and silica dust. We can charge the dust grains that we have in the simulation. We can track the initial grain size distribution and the evolving grain size distribution throughout the simulation. We have drag forces, gas and plasma drag forces, which will allow us to move the grains in the simulation. And then in terms of destruction, we have sputtering and, again, very important, the grain-grain collisions. So with this code now, which hopefully allows us to track the dust and allows us to realistically simulate the dust destruction, we can now select a set of initial conditions and basically put that into our code. So the initial conditions we've selected are, of course, for Cas8. So for those of you who are interested, I'm just going to give you those on one slide. So you've got the ambient medium, that's the ejector of our supernova remnant. You have the gas cloud, that's our dense clump where the dust is located. The shock velocity is given down here, and this is the ratio of the gas to the dust in our clump. The one parameter that I want to point out here is the heat parameter up here. This basically tells you the ratio between the density in the ejector and the density in your clump. And later on, in a couple of plots, we're going to vary that value here to show you the influence that initial parameter has on our dust survival rates. Right. So if you put all of that into our hydro code, you get stuff like this. So these are a couple of screenshots of a cloud crushing simulations that we've run. We've got the first one here. This is after roughly 8 years. So you can still kind of see the shape of the clump. You can see that the shock has passed around it and is now moving through the rest of the ejector. If you move on to, say, 28 years, you can start to see that the clump is breaking apart. There are instabilities forming, and as you let time continue, you will see that these instabilities start to tear the clump apart. Now, I have to mention here that these simulations are in 2D. I'm going to say something about 3D towards the end of my talk. Now, if you put dust in these, the first result that I want to highlight is this one right here. So, well, this is not the result that I want to show you. This is the result that we had before. So this graph shows you on the x-axis the time, and on the y-axis it shows you the surviving dust mass. And the two curves you have here are basically the effect grain-grain collisions have and the effect that sputtering has. And if you compare these two, you kind of understand why people tend to neglect the grain-grain collisions, because they don't really seem that important. So just considering sputtering seems reasonable. But if you now combine grain-grain collision and sputtering in one simulation, you're going to get this curve right here, which significantly increases the dust destruction that you get. And that is because, that's because grain-grain collisions and sputtering don't act independent of each other. Sputtering is very efficient for very small grains, not so efficient for the large grains. But if you have grain-grain collisions, those can break apart the large grains, so you've got more small grains, which are more easily destroyed. So that's the main message here. Grain-grain collisions should not be neglected based on this blood, but I've got two more bloods that's going to show that even more clearly. So the next blood I'm going to show you, again, is just for sputtering, so there's going to be no grain-grain collision in the next blood. And it's a bit complicated, so I'm going to walk you through that. So every single one of these boxes is a simulation that we've run, and we've got the dust surviving rate from every one of these simulations that's represented by this color bar. So if you go to blue colors, basically all the dust is being destroyed. If you go to yellow colors, then all the dust is surviving. On the x-axis here, thank you, you've got the peak of the distribution, and on the y-axis, you've got the width of the distribution. And what you see is that in this area, you basically destroy everything, and in this area up here, basically everything survives. So that's looking quite good, but that is only for sputtering. Now, in the next slide, I'm going to have the exact same plot, but for sputtering combined with grain-grain collisions. And it's going to change significantly. So we're going to go from this picture to this picture right here. And suddenly, you see there's a lot of blue here. So we've still got the destruction in this area, but we used to have like high survival rates up here, and that's now completely gone because we're breaking apart the large grains and breaking them into smaller grains that are more easily destroyed. And the surviving dust is basically in this flame-like structure here at the bottom. So the surviving dust seems to prefer narrow distributions and peak sizes between about 100 and 1,000 nanometers. But even the dust that does survive, we've got survival rates of about 30%. We're not getting above 30% in this setup. So again, if you compare these two plots, only sputtering and then sputtering and grain-grain collision, that should make it clear that grain-grain collisions have a significant effect on the dust survival rate that you actually get out. Now, you notice the heat parameter up here, which I've mentioned earlier. Now, again, this is the density contrast between the ambient medium and the clump. And we did vary that in a series of simulations. So I just want to show you on two plots what effect the variation of that parameter has. So the first plot is going to be for carbon. And again, you've got the peak of the distribution on the x-axis. You've got the surviving dust mass on the y-axis. And the different curves represent different density contrasts between ambient medium and clump. Now, what I don't want to do is I don't want to focus on one specific curve here. I just want to show you that by varying these input parameters, you can get a wide range of predicted survival rates. But we can get, with relatively realistic density contrast, we can get up to about 30% survival for carbon in case A with that specific initial distribution. Now, if we pick a dust species that's more likely to be present in case A, which would be silicate, that plot again shifts incredibly. So this is carbon and this is silicate. So you can see a lot of it shifts towards the smaller grain sizes. And again, depending on the density contrast you have, you can get basically from 0% survival rate up to, in this case, about 40% of survival. So the initial conditions, as always, are incredibly important, and it's very hard to make a unified prediction about the general dust survival rate in all supernova remnants that we have. Now, to round this off, I just want to give a quick shout-out to my colleague Florian. So all the blots that you've seen here are from his external dust processing code. So he's taken the dusty grid approach, which I'm incorporating into the hydrodynamic code, and he's written an external dust processing code, which he's presented on his poster here, and we've just submitted the paper about 2 weeks ago. So if you want to know more about that, please go speak to him. I'm sure he's going to be happy about that. And to summarize our findings, so what we're doing is we're running hydrodynamic simulations with dust destruction processes to figure out how much dust survives the passage of the reverse shock. And what we have found is, firstly, that grain-grain collisions facilitate dust destruction by sputtering, so they should not be neglected. And secondly, depending on your initial conditions, and that could be the grain species, it could be the grain size distribution, or the clump to ambient medium gas density, that's a long word, we find very different, very varying dust survival rates. And for Cas-A and silicate, we can find survival rates up to 40%. Now, what we're going to do in the future is we want to try 3D simulations. Now, as I said, all of the simulations so far were in 2D because we were very limited by the facilities we had. But we got Dirac time earlier this year, so we're running 3D simulations. And then finally, we also want to move on to MHD simulations. Thank you very much.
Okay, that was precisely on time. We're ready for questions. Yes, Steve.
So your grains are charged.
Yes.
If you put a magnetic field in, you can destroy them even better. Have you thought of that?
I've got a lot of opinions on that. I don't want to make predictions here, but there are certain effects that we expect, and that's going to be a long answer, I'm sorry. So there was a paper last year, I think I'm going to start with that, it was by Fry et al. They predicted basically that in the presence of a magnetic field, you can have like these little grains and they become like these ping pong balls being sputtered around between the shocks, which could increase your dust destruction. So that's a possibility. However, if we include magnetic fields, our simulations will change dramatically. So if I go back a little bit to this picture right here, so this is in 2D. And the thing is, in 2D, your instabilities develop very differently to 3D. So in 2D, you've got this cascade of instabilities which will tear the clump apart. However, if you go to 3D, you will get inverse cascading, which will kind of suppress the instabilities. And if you then add MHD, depending on whether you have a field in the clump, depending on how the field is orientated outside in the ambient medium, you could have field lines wrap around the clump, press on it, and then further suppress the instabilities that you get. Which would mean, if the field is correctly aligned and if that actually happens, that could mean that we're actually not breaking the clump apart like this and that the dust inside it would remain protected from the hot ambient medium around it, which could reduce the amount of dust that's being destroyed. But again, I haven't done too much research yet because we haven't done it, so I'm not quite sure about the parameters that we're going to put into the code. And all of that, like all of these speculations, depend on like the wave numbers that we get, the magnetic field strength, the beta number, and all of that. And I'm not sure about the parameter ranges we're in right now. So I'm saying it's possible that we destroy more, but based on how the clump might evolve, I think it's also possible that we might not destroy as much. Thank you.
Okay, Tomas, you had your...
Okay,
very good. Right behind you, yep, right there.
I was struck by your statement that grain-grain collisions necessarily lead to grains being shattered. Wouldn't it be likely that they could also coalesce to form larger grains depending upon the...
Absolutely, so I didn't mention that. Grains. I'm not going to go through
I'm
my
sorry,
backup
could
slide
you briefly restate so the question?
Sure. None of it. So the question was, I did mention grain-grain collisions as a method to destroy dust, and the question was, is there a possibility that it actually grows dust? And there is. So in the algorithm that we have implemented, what we're looking at is the relative velocity between grains when they collide. And then depending on that relative velocity, we can either have vaporization, so we're blowing them apart completely, we can have fragmentation, which is what we're talking about here, destruction, or if the velocities are very slow, they can stick together and we can actually form grains. It's not happening too often, but there is a possibility of that happening. Thank you.
Okay, very good. I'm going to end the questions there. Let's thank Francesca again for a great talk.